Hi, welcome. It is the 90 Day Website Mastery Podcast, your perfect companion to our 90 Day Website Mastery Program. And of course, our recently published book, Web Proud. We are live. We're live on Instagram. We're live on LinkedIn. We are live on YouTube. Or perhaps you're listening right now to the podcast on one of your favorite podcast platforms. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. It's episode 42, our 42nd episode. We're excited to bring you even more valuable insights and practical advice to help you enhance your website's performance. Join us as we explore strategies to make your website work even harder for you, reigniting your pride in your online presence. We want you to feel proud of your website. Web proud, Pascal?
Always, or certainly, you know, working towards it all of the time with my clients through mentoring sessions to speaking. But listen, I had a quick glance at the show notes. I mean, you and I work separately. We're very, very busy. So we work on the show notes separately. So this morning when I was looking at the kind of full document, once again, it's going to get super practical, full of advice and things that people can implement right now.
We've got four segments. We have the You Ask, We Answer. We have Website Stories, the Website Engine Room. And of course, we always finish with a website call to action where we'll give you one tip or trick that you could be doing right now to your website to start feeling web proud again. Listen, let's start with You Ask, We Answer.
Now, this one is inspired by last week I was doing a mentoring session, and we work on a number of things to do with the client's digital presence. And they actually had this interesting query question, which I would love to hear what you think. So the situation was, and so my website designer has asked for copies of my 2025 customer personas or customer avatars. And the client reacted saying, I don't think I've done this before. Where would you start? What say you, Johnny Ross?
Yeah, well, this is interesting because with the different clients I work with, the number of different clients, you find that either they've never heard of personas or target or really thought properly about target audiences, or they do have them and they're out of date, or they have them and they don't use them, or you've got your sort of top 5% that have them and are using them correctly. I think there's a few barriers here, which is, first of all, I don't think there's a real understanding of how useful they can be and how you should be using them on such a daily basis. There's also a barrier of how difficult they might be to put together. And if you're sort of forced to sort of sit down and start doing them straight away, then you can end up getting quite a mind block as well and sort of not knowing where to start. So I think this is about reflecting. It's about just, you know, as you are working in your day-to-day business as usual, when you're speaking to clients, speaking to potential customers, potential clients, that's when it's about thinking about, what are they asking? What sort of demographic are they? What sector are they? What seniority are they? And really start understanding the people behind the businesses that you're talking to, or perhaps you're a consumer business and the consumers, but really reflecting as you are in your day-to-day business life, who are these people? And that's the moment to start thinking about target audience and personas, to then at some point later on, to start going through a structured process in terms of creating, your avatars for 2025. And there might be a number. There might, you know, some businesses have two or three, some businesses might have even a dozen. But the best thing to do is, as I said, whilst you're in your daily business, that's the time to be thinking. Is that where you would take things, Pascal?
Yeah, listen, I've done all sorts. You know, when we're doing the workshops, so let's see. Now, let's sit down and for the next hour, let's create the avatar, the archetype, whatever you want to call them. But that's a big ask. And I think that's really not necessarily a nice activity for everybody, because it requires so much reflection and recollection of information that you've got somewhere buried in your mind. Now, listen, I was delighted to hear that the web design agency wanted to see the copy of the avatars and the archetypes. It's so rare even for the industry to kind of do that. But I would agree with you. For me, it's almost like, take your time with it. You know, don't think you have to quickly go on the computer, even use AI if you want to do it there and then. I think you should give yourself days, if not weeks, of reflection. So look back at the older book as well. You know, reconnect with the content contracts and the kind of exchanges that have been really enjoyable to you, because I think that should work for you as well. So the idea of capturing a description of your ideal customer means that it's worked for you as well as for them. And then you kind of slowly but surely have lots of notes and post-its, you know, jotted down in different kind of sources, and then you can start to structure that. And what I want to do is suggest to people that you should have your own template. Don't worry about necessarily what others have done before. I mean, by all means, for inspiration, you can go online and look for some information. Perhaps you can ask AI for some suggestions. But I think that persona, that archetype, that document that you've created, in the end, needs to feel like your own creation. And I think you're right. Therefore, you'd be using it more than once. It's not just for the website. It's for the next social media marketing strategy. It's for the next kind of content series. It's for SEO. You should always go back, because within the information contained by the summary statement, if you will, Johnny, there'd be lots of nuggets of information about why they wouldn't want to work with you, their pain point, the questions they have, and all those things that is there to remind you about the way you should approach driving traffic to your website and running the website when it's not your full-time occupation.
Well, they're really powerful, aren't they? So the bottom line here is that the conversion will be so much higher if you're talking in their language. That's the key point here. If you're sort of not using personas on a daily basis, archetypes on a daily basis, in everything, whether it be in a meeting, whether it be on a direct mail campaign, whether it be an email campaign, a social media campaign, any of those, even just a tweet, okay? If you're just going out to everyone and anyone, then the conversion there, based on the conversion of going very targeted to a particular avatar, is so different, hugely different. And it doesn't put the other avatars off, by the way. That's the common misconception, that the concern is, well, if I go out and talk to this particular audience at this particular seniority, at this particular level, then, you know, that everyone else isn't going to buy from me. That's not the point. That, in fact, that's not that they are. The difference is that the people you've gone out to talk to are going to buy more from you. That's the big difference. And the people that you're not talking to at the time are still going to come to you. It's not going to put them off. In fact, if anything, it might intrigue at times. And there's nothing to, at some point, talk to those other avatars as well, of course. So the numbers show, the facts are, that it will increase your conversion rates. Avatars are really important.
They are. And please, everybody, just change the name. You don't have to use avatar. You don't have to use archetype. Just call them what you want.
Maybe you want.
You know, quite, you know, that's important, because you have to own it. And this takes me into, you know, I'm kind of tapping into my memory bank in when we crafted, you know, Web Proud, the book, and we talk about the five steps to becoming proud of your website again. And there's a chapter, and memory serves, it's chapter 2, where you and I talk about building those profiles and actually aligning them to the four types of visitors. For those of you who've read the book, that you're going to remember this, you know, we talk about the investigator, we talk about the relationship builder, we talk about the dreamer, we talk about the negotiator, and they all have key questions to make sure that your website experience is relevant and engaging. So do the research, and then affix, you know, some of the advice you can find in the books and other episode of this show. And I think what you'll have is something that, for me, it's a bit like, you know, when people do a business plan or a marketing plan, they do it once, they don't look at it again. I want to avoid that altogether. So start with just take your time, reflect the way Johnny mentioned it to you, compile a summary document that is so you know, pleasant to go back to. That's really important, that you're more likely to do so. And at the start of any kind of strategy sessions or kind of, you know, moment where you want to do some content, to scan through your avatars again, they're going to be a great source of inspiration for you.
Absolutely. Reflect on those personas, avatars, target audience, whatever you want to call them, but get reflecting. Let's move on to our next segment, which is website stories.
Now, in this segment of the show, we take pleasure in reviewing a piece of content. It could be an article, a podcast, an infographic, something that can help us reflect what it means to be a website manager in today's economy. And Johnny, I've gone for an article which has a very interesting title, which is as follows: Is Universal Search Optimization Queen in the New SEO Landscape? This is written by Umesh Panchal, who is a CMO and CEO of Next Level Web Solution. It was for the platform cmsy.com. Taking care of the introduction to this article, I'm going to go straight into it because I want people to actually read the article. This is something that should be shared around the office as well. But this is this idea that the term universal search optimization is more helpful for all of us when we plan about increasing our organic visibility across a number of platforms. And the reason why you want to be moving on potentially, because the words are very powerful, from SEO to, let's say, USO, universal search optimization, is because actually we now know that internet users seek information across multiple platforms, not just search engines. And in fact, even search engines themselves are serving information multiple ways. For example, AI summaries, vignette little windows, audio summaries are now part of the Google ecosystem and so on, Johnny. So the idea from Umesh is that you will actually help yourselves and help your customers discover you if you think about it by the side of multiple platforms. The article is really well structured, really well written. There's many segments people can kind of go to, but I picked one particular element of the article, which is called where you should focus your USO, universal search optimization efforts. And I wanted to get your reaction. So I said, by all means, of course, continue to do what you've been doing, what's working well on what is now called, interestingly, traditional search engines. Think about social media also. Think about AI search. So you've got two types, and you've got obviously the AI summaries within search engine, but of course you've got platforms like ChatGPT, Perplexity, and others are now used more frequently than ever before for searching, not just for content creation and something else. Don't forget e-commerce marketplace from Amazon to Etsy and a few others. And they are now, although I would say they're not necessarily emerging channels, but channels that are taking away some of that internet time budget, podcast forums, app stores, you know, printing media that's moving to digital media, you name it. So, you know, thinking about the typical day of your avatars or customer archetypes, it is likely that their internet time usage is now shared a bit more evenly across those, not just the search engines. Hence why we, as marketers, need to think about multiple platforms, not just the search engines.
USO instead of SEO, or is it combined? A really, really good point, especially as the landscape is changing so fast as well. And the shift from people using what is rightly called the traditional search engines, the Googles, the Bings, etc., to different platforms. You know, I've got five children, and I watch my 11-year-old, she turned 12 only last week, my 12-year-old, and I watch how she uses her device, and she's searching on, she doesn't go to Google or AI, she's going to TikTok and Snapchat for just a traditional search that we would automatically go to Google. So nothing to do with TikTok content or Snapchat content, but that's where she would search for something to do with school or something to do with, you know, if she's trying to find something out. So users are really shifting how they are using search, and the move to AI for ChatGPT, Perplexity, Gemini, etc., on how to find things is huge, because that's doing a lot of the legwork. Typically, we'd go to Google, we'd then have to sort of go through each website, start picking them apart. Do we want that one? Do we want that one? Now we can just go to Perplexity, go into a deep search, deep research, and say, right, this is what I want to achieve. Go and find it for me. And it's frightening. So you absolutely have to be considering USO. But the principles are quite similar. So it's about structuring the data. It's about user experience. It's about making sure that things are mobile friendly. And it's about diversifying your content types so that it's not just all text, or it's not just all video, it's not just all audio. It's a mixture of everything, because that's what even the traditional search engines are pulling in. They're pulling in lots of different types of content. The AI tools are different, pulling in lots of different types of content. So it's about having diversification, having it very structured, focusing on user experience, focusing on mobile, making sure that mobile is really part of the strategy, and keeping an eye on things, trying, going to some of these, going to the likes of TikTok, and doing a search to get some understanding of what competitors or what other organizations or businesses are actually doing to stand out in these things. And of course, I've not mentioned podcast platforms as well. So it really is just thinking holistically about all the different types of content you've got and all the different ways that that content could be found. Really, really important point.
And that means that, therefore, within your customer profile, the avatar, the archetype, there will be a section that talks about habits and behavior. And therefore, you could almost, you know, follow the list from Yumesh and list, you know, search engine, social media, AI search, shopping platform, emerging channels, podcast forums, and more, and literally do a bit of an investigation. You know, are my customers likely to have this particular behavior when they're looking for information? What is comforting, though, and the article kind of makes that point, is that all those platforms, they can only, you know, serve the content that exists. So as content creators, we have some element of control. It's not as if, you know, you just sit there in despair that you don't know what to do. What you have to do, and I think that's what you were hinting at, is perhaps actually create a more content-rich experience based on the information that you got from the archetype. So there was a phase, and they're still in there, when I see that with my clients, where people felt that you had to keep things short form, you know, succinct, get to the point quick, don't overwhelm people with information, too much copy, too many images, too long videos. But I think that would be a very unwise strategy in the context of universal search optimization, when actually people are seeking out different ranges of information. They have different questions, they have different wants and needs, and actually it is your job to have parity between how helpful you're going to be face-to-face and how helpful you are in advance during their kind of internet usage.
Yeah, the topic, diversification of content, absolutely. There's no point just going for short form only. It's about having a real good mixture. Obviously, understanding your target audience. I know I talked about TikTok and Snapchat there, and some of you might be thinking, well, hang on, my audience isn't on there. But what I'm suggesting is you can learn from those platforms in terms of the sorts of content that you need to be doing to make sure that you're reaching your audience on the platforms they're using. But I think there's things you can learn from TikTok. And I'll tell you now, you know, I was looking for a particular product only yesterday. I did not use Google. I used AI, and I found exactly what I wanted, and it was so much quicker. And I couldn't believe what it found me as well. I honestly believe that I could have found it in Google, but it would take me a long time.
And I think the logic that you've just described would work with what I call now online PR. So find the kind of news destinations that your customers are using, because the likelihood is, if they are spending time on that news destination, or they're spending time actually reading the newsletter in their inbox, they're not spending time searching for you on Google. So actually being an active participant in those news outlets, as one example, is that what we're looking at. So do the research, you know, where are your customers spending time? How they do, you know, if you think of a pie chart, it's not all of it on Google or Bing or Yahoo. It's going to be really multifaceted, and therefore the language needs to be challenged. I know we're going to be using SEO forever, you know, we've adopted it, but actually we need to make sure that in our head we mean any manner of searching for information, as opposed to just the search engine themselves.
Consider your USO. Let's move to our next segment, the website engine room.
Now, in this segment, Johnny and I like to surprise each other with a selection, an app, a software solution, maybe a piece of kit that can help us make our life easier as a content creator. So, Johnny, what is your selection for the website engine room?
So, I've gone with a website platform design tool. So a lot of people are starting to just build their own websites. And there's so many tools that are out there that makes it really easy to do this. In fact, there's so many that, sometimes you don't know where to start. But the one that I'm focusing on this week is Framer. So it's framer.com. As always, we put the links in our show notes, so please do have a look. This is an intuitive web design platform that allows you to build interactive, responsive websites without any code whatsoever. It's even great for marketeers looking to prototype or create polished landing pages. So it's quite handy for single owner businesses if you wanted to just set up a really quick and easy website. But I think the bit that is more interesting for me is, as a marketeer, to be able to quickly produce some kind of prototype or some kind of landing page, to even if it's to just do some testing, I think it's a really clever platform. So framer.com is the one that I am including in the website engine room this podcast.
Thank you so much. I think you're right. You know, the quicker you can get to a prototype and get some feedback from your colleagues, from your clients and so on, the better you can move much, much faster. So I've chosen an AI app. This will not surprise you, but I was generally massively surprised about its performance. So I have an issue with people using AI to create information that doesn't exist. So for example, images from nothing, you know, just from a text prompt or video and so on. I think AI is more powerful, more useful to all businesses if it actually enhances what already exists. I want you to imagine a situation where you have two photos of a product, ideally, and there are two different angles, maybe, or two different facets of that product. And using this platform called Vidify app from Shopify, you can literally get AI to imagine from image one to image two what the video sequence would be like. And you end up with something that is static to begin with, or maybe, let's say it's an outfit, maybe it's a jacket that is worn, you know, from the back, and then you can see the image, you know, from the front, and they are two static images, and it's just not engaging enough, or just not convincing enough. And what Vidify can do is imagine what a 20-second scene would look like, and literally from those two images, you end up with a video that you can upload, and you can then use your imagination. You could have maybe this for an ebook. You can have this for anything you want to sell, for venues maybe, and that's what I really want people to try out. You may not necessarily use it all of the time, but I want people to shift their mindset from using AI to create information that doesn't exist, as opposed to using AI to enhance the experience of that information that I've already crafted, the photography, the text, the short video that can become longer and so on. And AI can really do a very, very clever job of literally extrapolating the bits in the middle. So image one, image two, and then you have a scene with motion between those two platforms using Vidify, the app for Shopify e-commerce platforms.
I am loving some of those video AI apps right now, and I think you can bring stuff to life very quickly and easily. But I love the application that you're talking about there in terms of product. Very clever indeed. Daniel Watts is watching right now. He's put a comment on, which I think is a really interesting comment. He's put, "Is AI the death of Google?" Big statement. I was at a MailChimp conference last year. And in fact, it wasn't MailChimp, it was Brighton SEO. I was at Brighton SEO last year and I saw John Muller, and I asked him exactly the same question. He obviously didn't take it very well.
For me, what is interesting is we are literally 3 weeks away from the Google annual conference, Google I.O., and I can only imagine that they're going to be fighting back quite robustly. So Dan, I don't think so, because I think what we're going to have is a battle between, are people going to become Gemini users and they still be using the Google products? Are they going to be Copilot users and be Microsoft? Or are we going to be rebels and use independents like ChatGPT, Perplexity, and all the others, perhaps a mixture? But I don't think so. But what I detect is certainly the way they're going to serve information is going to catch people out who have not put the time and effort in their content creation.
Yeah, I think they're investing heavily in Gemini. They are integrating it heavily into search, and they are going to try their very damnedest to keep a segment of the audience. But I don't see it as the death. I think we are so ingrained into their ecosystem in terms of the tools. So as a marketeer, whether that be things like Looker Studio, Google Analytics, of course Google Drive, of course Gmail, we're so integrated into the system and so many other apps that they have that I don't see it, the search particularly going not the death of it anyway, but they're going to have to fight hard. They're going to have to stay up front. And I think, well, I'm not sure if it's good as a consumer or not, but you know, is AI good for a consumer? Who knows? But in terms of the output and how clever the AI is becoming from a marketeer's point of view, I can only see that advancing in and that's forcing Google to advance in a better way for marketeers right now. So yeah, very good question. Interesting. And let's wait and see where we get to. Let's move on to our last segment, which is the website call to action.
Now, this is about the one change, the one adjustment you should be making right now on your website. Johnny, what is your recommendation?
Really simple. So the point of this is that it's just one simple change that you could make that could increase conversion, could increase leads, could increase time spent on your website, and to help you feel more proud of your website. So really simple. It's nothing new either. It's about adding a little badge onto content or products. And that badge, for example, could be just a little new sticker. So a little sticker, little visual sticker that sits on top of content or product with the word new. Now, some of you know, if you've got e-commerce, perhaps you've already using this sticker, and it's you know, I was using it back in 99 on a sunglass website, on an e-commerce sunglass website. But if you have a look at traditional B&B websites right now, none of them are using stickers on their blog content to try and attract people to click through. So just adding that little sticker, whether it be categories or whether it be that new badge or something that's going to encourage exploration and draw attention to that particular product or that particular piece of content, add badges, add stickers. That's my website call to action for this episode.
Hey, do you know, I love it. I mean, it's so simple. And in fact, you know, it takes me back. We used to do this all the time with print media. And sometimes, you know, those habits, we just kind of forget, but because you go digital now. By pure accident, I don't want people to accuse us that you and I know what we're doing. I also have something which is to do with encouraging exploration of your website. And this came about as a personal experience of someone that I follow on LinkedIn. And they share information and you take it in, you know, via LinkedIn. Sometimes they share the URL and you choose not to click, whatever. It's all that. But when I did click on the URL and actually went on their website, that website was really good. And there were sections and features that I just didn't know existed because the habit was to consume the information via social media. So I came up with this idea of actually, you should on a regular basis highlight and promote the key section of your website. So instead of, you know, doing the bit which we all do of here's a summary statement about my amazing content and please you know click on the link to go and check it out, which people tend not to, I think that it's appropriate to have, you know, within your diary or social media post something that just lets you literally summarize the bit of the website people perhaps don't know about or have forgotten about. So for me, my recommendation is review how you are representing your website on social media. Put together a plan to break down the key section and the key features that you've spent so much time and effort and money, you know, building for your audience, and literally let people know that precisely about the website experience as opposed to just doing it via content sharing. So that is my call to action for today.
Fantastic. What a great episode. We've talked about USO, Universal Search Optimization, the thoughts of really not just thinking about Google, but thinking about all your different types of content and how you can optimize for all the different ways users engage with content online digitally. Also about customer avatars, whether you call them personas, target audience, whatever you want to call them, how important they are, and don't forget about them. And you don't have to force yourself to do them, but start thinking about it in your next meeting or your next phone call. Start defining the type of person that you're talking to. I think that's really important. We've covered the website engine room, where we talked about a couple of apps bringing your products to life with video, and how to prototype websites really easier with Framer, and call to actions on your website using badges and stickers to get that, encourage that exploration get people to click through more, and Pascal's final point around representing your website on how you represent your website on social media accounts and finding ways to highlight the key sections and unique features of your website. Great episode, Pascal.
Thank you very much for the hosting and also for allowing me to do the research this week. And more importantly, you, viewers and listeners, do send us your questions, send us your challenges. Show us as well the before and after. I mean, we've mentioned that before, but this idea of if you've acted on the website and it's now created, you know, some lovely results for you, let us know as well. We'd love to know. And we always welcome the keep coming in, you know, the reactions and thoughts on the book as well.
Make sure you click that subscribe button to if this content is helpful, if it's resourceful, don't miss out. Make sure you find out when we are next online. So click that subscribe button, tell your friends, and as Pascal has said, share and let us know your thoughts if you want us to explore anything. What a great episode. That's the wrap for episode 42 of the 90 Day Website Mastery Podcast, your audio companion to the 90 Day Website Mastery Program. For more information, visit 90daymarketingmastery.com, where you can book a discovery call with either myself or Pascal. And of course, get over to Amazon for our book, Web Proud, out now. Please do have a look and support us. That would be amazing. All of these links and sections will be in the show notes, of course, which will come out. But it's goodbye for now. We'll leave you with a fun video and audio montage to enjoy whilst you review your notes and action steps and take action and get web proud right now. We'll see you all soon. Take care. Thanks, Pascal.
Bye-bye.